another episode of the TetraCast. This is our Review Sites weekly podcast, where we get the site staff together to talk about our favorite genre of video games. We've got the full usual crew here today. I'm your host. My name is Brian Vitale. With me today, we have Josh Torres.
I learned about soccer this week.
We have Adam Vitale.
Hello.
James Galizio.
Hey, folks.
And Chow Min Wu.
How's it going?
We are recording this episode on March 30th, so it is the last episode for the first quarter of the year, and what an insane quarter it's been. We've kind of beaten that horse to death. We're all drowning in RPGs to play, and I know we've kind of been lamenting that for a while now, and April doesn't slow down. I know a lot of us here have been continuing to play Dragon's Dogma. I personally just finished up Granblue. Remember when that game came out forever ago?
Hell yeah.
We got some people playing Unicorn, Rise of the Ronin, and then April, you know, we've already had people looking ahead to all sorts of games, and of course we're going to cover some of that news here. In terms of this podcast, there's not actually a lot of new news to cover, so the slate of topics might be a little bit shorter, so we'll go in a little bit into the few things that we do have, a couple of games that we're currently playing. We do have a couple, like, preview, both literal preview, beta opportunities, and demos to talk about. So that'll kind of be the focus of this podcast. We're going to talk about kind of three games in particular. First of all, we'll be talking about a few demos or betas that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks for upcoming games that Josh has been able to put some time into. And then James had a preview opportunity for an upcoming RPG later in the year that we've also had an opportunity to go hands-on with, get some access from the devs for that. So I'm just going to pick kind of a random order here. We talked about this last week, kind of near the very end of the podcast, talking about the Switch beta for an upcoming game, the I hope I get the full title here, Inazuma 11 Victory Road had a Switch beta that started on March 28th. I guess while I'm talking about this beta, we kind of joked that Level 5 must be listening to the TetraCast, because they then soon in the last week announced that that beta, a separate beta actually, will be coming out for the other platforms for that game. There will be a PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and PC beta test separate from the Switch beta announced, but taking place at a later date. So for those that don't have a Switch but are interested in Inazuma 11 Victory Road and are interested in playing the game before it officially releases, that will come out at some point, hopefully within the next couple months, though the date is not yet known. But it did come out and was available on Switch, and Josh decided to go hands-on with it. So that's why he said he learned about soccer this week. So we'll start out with that.
Yeah, the only and the most accurate soccer. Soccer here in the United States, if you're international, we're sorry to say soccer. They say football, and we know, okay? So it's going to be for the soccer from here on out. So this game is really... I don't know where to start, man. The worldwide beta testing that they're doing right now is available, you know, internationally for Switch for only, and like you said, it'll come to other platforms later. I think it might be like the same beta, but it'll be rolled out in a similar fashion, because they said it's coming to those PlayStation and Steam platforms to test crossplay. I don't know if the contents of them are going to be the same. I imagine it has to. Who knows? And the nature of this beta period is weird, because it has like, it's like there's no end date to it. It's like it's indefinite until they stop, because I think they're trying to gather a lot of like feedback over time from not just Japan but like internationally. They want, you know, they want to hear from various people around the world to you know, voice their experience, what they think should be improved, what they like about it. And Adam and I were discussing this, I don't know if it was on the podcast or before a podcast, but Level 5 seems to have, like, is pinning a lot of their hopes and dreams on this Inazuma 11 release, because it is not just, like, a celebration or anniversary title. It's, like, pretty much pulling in from, like, every single Inazuma, previous Inazuma 11 game, anime, whatever. Like, it's, like, all of these Inazuma 11 characters are coming back in some way, shape, or form in this game. Some of them through DLC, most of them through the base game. From what they previously announced. So they really, really want this game to be successful. Right? And this game has been in development hell for a long time. This has seen numerous internal delays again and again and again. Like, I forgot exactly when this Victory Road was initially announced. I don't think it was announced as Victory Road, but like, it was just like, hey, there's a new Inazuma 11 in development. at first it was only for Japan, and then they announced it for a worldwide release, and it just, but it kept getting delayed.
It used to be called Inazuma 11 Ares, like the god Ares, and I don't even remember when that was originally announced. It was like, it feels like 2018, like five plus years. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And Adam did read a statement on the very, I think it was near the end of the last podcast, kind of highlighting how much weight they're putting on this beta, where they basically said, we don't, and this is before they announced, this is based referring to the Switch beta, before they announced the more extended beta later. They said, yeah, it's not enough to have just a handful of people play this and tell us it's good. We need hundreds of people to play and test this. And we kind of said that was at odds, like, then why are you only doing it on a Switch? And they listened, and then they said, okay, it's also coming on PC and PlayStation. And I don't know if I remember right, or maybe James or Josh knows as well. The next beta will be crossed between PC and PlayStation. Like, it'll be testing out that capability of the game as well.
Yeah, crossplay. Yeah, that's the purpose for that. So, yeah, hopefully that is smooth. But so before we get into, like, actual my experience, I think the rollout of this beta, like, once again, is really weird, because there's, like, a beta that's going to get updated over time. Like, for right now, you can only do, like, the basic play against bots or play against real people online. But then later on, they'll update it so you can play part of, like, the beginning of the story. So, like, they're going to add more modes to this beta over time, but they haven't disclosed when, necessarily. It's a very odd, like, rollout. And, like, even in the, when you're playing the game, there's, like, even, like, almost a progression system where, like, you'll earn, like, merits or, like, stuff, like, currencies to, like, use it in an in-game shop with those in-game currencies to, like, unlock more things, like, new difficulty modes and, like, a new team to, like, go against and then play as. So, like, there's, like, some form of in-game progression to, you know, incentivize you to work towards something in the game. So I've never really played an Inazuma 11 game before. I've been interested in, like, I'm interested in the concept of it. I don't know, so, but I don't know any about the characters or the ongoing storyline.
Yeah, just tee it up for us that don't have the game in front of us. Like, you boot up the beta. I assume it shows, like, some sort of almost, like, because, you know, the terms, like, beta and demo have kind of, like, overlapped a little bit.
Yeah.
In a decade. And then so you boot it up. Like, do you immediately, like, create a character, or does it plop you in the middle of a scenario? Like, how does it open up what you're the player?
It brings you to, it's they call it the worldwide beta test or some sort of like that. Never really a demo. It's more like a beta test. And you kind of have, like, the main menu of the screen, and it shows, like, you know, you have the settings option and that and then online or that mode versus mode, either against bots and or real people. But it's like it's a standard menu, and then, like, most of the options are grayed out. Some of them will say this will be available in the full release, and some of them will say it'll come to this beta at a later date. It's like, okay. So it gives you, you know, just the info shit. It's like this will come later in this beta. Or some of them are like, it's gonna be in the full release. We're like, okay, fine. But so the onboarding experience is weird, because when you go into this versus mode, you have this thing called gameplay tutorial, and in my head, I'm like, oh, okay, so you can, like, kind of, they'll show you the ropes and ease you in, and, like, with a playable tutorial to, like, kind of, you know, introduce you to the system. I was wrong. This is a very dense, almost 5-minute video going over all the systems. But you cannot pause or rewind this video as you're watching it. They put this video up on the level 5. I eventually learned they put this video up on the official level 5 YouTube to make it more, you know, digestible. But this goes over, like, you know, basic controls, then mechanics like focus, scramble, tension, zone, direct shot, dash attack, castle walls, tactics, and so on. And so it's a lot. And you're just like, kind of nodding, like, I guess, sure. And this bits of this tutorial will pop up in, like, the first game or match that you play against a bot. It's only really a problem for that first match. But in that first match, if you've never played an Inazuma 11 game before, you'll be lost as fuck, like I was. Like, I was like, I do not comprehend what the fuck I'm doing. Because on top of that, you have, like, all these different skills and tactics, cutscenes firing off, and you're just like, I have no idea what's going on. What's the enemy team doing? You know, but it began to make more sense by the time at the end of the second match. It's like, okay, I kind of get a grasp of, like, the pace of this game and what's going on. So basically, Yeah, it is much like a soccer match, but you don't really play it like a standard soccer game, obviously, like how you would find like in FIFA. So when enemies run into each other, like you have possession of the ball, and you run into the enemy team, you kind of go into this, it's not necessarily turn-based, it's almost like this mini-game where, say I have possession of the ball, and I'm going against an opponent, you see that they're trying to block me from proceeding forward, and like, my task is to obviously break through to them, because if I don't, they'll steal possession of the ball. So I kind of have to find, like, guess either left or right and break through that, or if there's someone else near me, I can pass it to them, and that'll be the standoff. There are sometimes different skills that unique players might have that like specialize in these kinds of encounters. These are called focuses, I believe, or scrambles. I forgot. And so sometimes, like, depending on who you're facing off against, you or the enemy might have a specific skill to resolve these encounters in their favor because they have enough. I think it's called tension points or something like that. It's like a resource.
You know what my brain is is painting in my mind's eye as you describe this?
Blitzball. Yes. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Like, imagine, like, oh, you have the ball, blitzball, you run to an enemy, then you have, like, a kind of quasi-turn-based little encounter where there's abilities, and then you have to, like, tackle, and I know that's just because, you know, that's my brain's just trying to draw an analog, and that's what it, where it happened to go.
it's really crazy over the top, too, so, like, I laughed at, like, the end of, like, the third match that I played, because it ended during this kind of face-off, and, like, it was my dude against their other dude that both had skills that could resolve this encounter. So they were like, you know, they were specialists in this like encounter of like either defending or breaking through. And the enemy has, or the team that I was facing against, this player had a skill called Hunter's Net. And like that would like just immediately get the steal possession of the ball right then and there. And it sure is like an anime cutscene of like, they have like a net that they cast on you to, you know, separate you from the ball. But then I countered back with this player where it's, I think it's called like Heaven's Time or something. So they had like a face off like Heaven's Time versus Hunter's Net, and my Heaven's Time won out. I have no idea why, to be honest. But and then there was this cutscene of like this my dude just like froze time all around him and just fucking strolled on by everyone was frozen. I'm like, okay, sure. And that just made me laugh because that's the first time I saw that animation. I'm like, these kids are cracked, okay? So you know, basically you're passing around the ball, you're trying to break through as many people as you can when you're in possession of the ball to get near the goal. So the way you score in this game is pretty interesting because you're kind of almost whittling down the health bar of a goalie, and when you get near the end zone or whatever you call it in soccer, right? Sorry if I'm butchering a lot of these terms for soccer fans. I'm sorry. I'm not a sports person. Too. I'm not a soccer person, so I'm very qualified to talk about this game. So you're getting near there, and then you can actually like activate like something called the zone. The zone, in which you slow down time, and you can either choose this slowdown to either aim where you're gonna shoot it, or you can pass it to another person. And when you pass it to another person successfully for another angle of a shot, maybe you'll accrue. I don't know if it's more tension or more bond points. It could be a bit of both, but the basic idea is you're juicing up like your shot, so the more you kind of pass it around or maybe get a advantageous angle of attack or angle of a shot, you're accruing a resource to get to essentially raise the attack value of your shot. And sometimes you can raise it so much that like you can activate someone's ability to like get like a fancy shot on them that'll add more modifiers and attack power to your shot. And when you shoot it and a goalie tries to stop it, it'll basically compare their like defense points or HP value against the attack value of your shot. So usually, like the first time you try to do it, it won't be successful. But you whittled off the difference between like the attack value of your shot versus their HP. So you're like kind of like taking down their HP bar. Obviously, the lower it is, the higher probability it'll be for a shot to come through. There is a thing called a breach and save system. I don't know if it's RNG or not, but there will be certain times where, like, depending on whether a breach or save is activated, whether the ball will go in regardless of what the conditions were, or they'll save it regardless of, like, if it was a shot that was supposed to be in your favor. I don't know what dictates between a successful breach or save activation. So, but that's the very basic idea of how you push offense in this game to score a goal. You have possession of the ball, you're breaking through the enemy team, and then you're lining up a shot between one or more of your players for your line of attack. On defense, it's the same thing, except it's on the other end now, where you're trying to ensure that, like, you know, if you can't stop their offense of them, like, they keep on breaking through to you, it's not the end. But when they're starting to line up a shot, they'll enter their zone, and it'll slow down time once again, but you have the perspective of the goalie now. And during this time, you can actually, like, direct two nearby players on your team to form a castle wall. And so it's basically just like a marker on the ground saying, hey, one person go here and a person go here. And you're hoping that they get there in time to interrupt the trajectory of the incoming shot. So, like, when they properly get there in time and stands up, they have like a castle wall. And that's kind of like your defense points that they have to kind of go through. So that those will lower the attack value of the incoming shot if they run up against a castle wall. It won't necessarily stop them, but it will lower their potency.
And my brain is just like having defenders on a shot in Blitzball.
I mean, you're not wrong. So and then on top of all this, you know, you have like different tactics that you can put on the field to kind of do various effects. Whether it's like if you're in this portion of the field, it'll actually have like a marker or drawing on the ground. Like some of these tactics, like one might be like a lightning bolt shape, and it's like at this part of the field. Like, if you pass it to another person, you'll gain more bond power. Or, like, if they, you know, have a formation tactic that's, like, it looks like two pillars, vertical pillars throughout the field. It's, like, if you're in this zone, you might, like, run faster or something, right? That. So you can, like, employ different tactics that in certain parts of the map to kind of gain an advantage at those specific zones there. So, and then, obviously, I only played against bots, but I did hear a little bit about the online experience, and the online experience is rough because, like, it's international play, so you'll have, like, say, a European players versus, like, Japanese players, and, like, the netcode can't handle that, so you'll get a lot of, like, apparently, like, stuttering and not great, like, connection quality between them. So, hopefully, you know, part of the feedback that people give to Level 5 about this is, hey, please, you know, make the connection quality or network better for this game. This will be very, very important for this kind of game, because I imagine for a lot of Inazuma 11 players, part of the charm of this series is facing off against, like, friends or other people and whatnot. Like, you need to think about, like, these systems that, like, it already seems like a lot on paper, but then, like, you integrate that into, like, of two live people facing off against each other. It's a fucking lot, because it's a lot of it, I imagine, is also a knowledge check too, of like knowing what their team is and what their team skills are. You know, how can you best counter or sort of like work with what you have against them. Of course, this game has like an RPG system in the terms of like after a match, your team members will level up. They'll gain stats and various abilities.
I was going to ask about just like build craft. Like, do you have like a stat loadout? Do you have gear? Are there like, I have 10 abilities, I can slot three of them? Just like, how does like preparing your player work?
There's stat loadouts. I'm not sure about the equipment. I haven't really delved in too much, but there's definitely like players that like have a linear skill learning. I assume this is because of like lore reasons, right? Like say like there's this anime character in a Inazuma 11 game that has like an iconic ability. So of course, eventually when they level up to a certain point, they'll gain this iconic ability for them. So I don't know if you can switch and mix and match different skills to other players, but there's definitely it gets crazy. So I described two, but one of them is like there's this big dude on my team, and he has an ability called The Wall. That's the ability. And so when an incoming shot is coming, you can activate it if you have like enough resources, and he'll like slam his hand down on the ground, and there's like rock formation pillars that go up and they block the soccer ball. You know, another one can like summon like a fire tornado, and like another person like has like a wolf formation that like does weird shit to the ball, you know? So it's a lot of like things that just like you're like, okay, I guess. especially it's gonna be a long time. Like for me, it's gonna take a long time for me to like learn, you know, people's abilities, because there's like the roster of this game is like insane. So it's like you have like this starter team that like you play, but then you can also like play other teams offered in the demo. And like I said, you can even like unlock a new difficulties and like a new, you know, I don't know if they're a better team or like, but at least it's like a new team with new players and therefore new skills and abilities for you to like try out. And even during like the halftime, you know, you can like do substitutions as well, and all that sort of stuff. So it is a very it's an interesting demo. I feel like I'm gonna play more of it whenever this hits Steam, because you know it runs fine at 30 FPS, but I feel like the controls are a little unresponsive, and I wonder if that's just like kind of like a performance issue on the Switch. I kind of wish it was just like the responsiveness of the controls was a little tighter throughout it, but it I think a lot of this game, like the first like 2 to 3 hours for me, is just going to be like learning like the proper pace of matches and understanding like what's like generally a good idea to like how to approach you know, goalies and how to push offense and how to be better at defense, because it's not like I feel like I'm not even at normal difficulty yet. I'm still just like at the first difficulty level playing the starter team against like the other like basic enemy team, and I'm just like slowly learning. I'm like, it's like baby steps almost, because I'm like, I have no clue what I'm doing in some situations. Like, did I do something wrong? And I'm just like, I don't know. But I think that's just, I think it's gonna be a really, really fun game to play once you and maybe like some other like-minded people around you are like kind of all in on like making the commitment to learn this game and like and then help each other get better throughout it. And of course, you know, it's not just like the PvP experience, but the some prior marketing for this game seems to like say this will have like a very, 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 very robust single player experience and a lot of modes as well to dive into. So, you know, level 5 is saying that like this game will have crazy amount of content. We'll see how that all pans out, you know. I think the core systems that they have is really solid, even though I suck at it. But I think what they have is really interesting and pretty solid right now.
I was trying to think of another game that's a comparison that has like a... Because, yeah, I was actually going to think about, you know, the story mode, which is supposed to be like this pretty lengthy, involved thing that is meant to kind of lead you into the more arcadey PvP game mode. I was trying to think of another game that where you have kind of that thing, like, yeah, I put 20 hours into the story mode. I'm up to whatever, and I've increased my team skill or ability, or I've gotten new gear or something, and then in some fashion that interfaces with the multiplayer mode. That ends up being probably the majority of the game time for those that end up playing it a lot, because like Overwatch 2 kind of was going to have that story mode for ostensibly PvP game, but then they dropped it. And I was just like, whether it's a sports game or a arena shooter, I was trying to think of something that has like a very strong, maybe like Titanfall 2, because that maybe because like Titanfall 1 didn't have it, and then they added it to 2 for the story mode. Yeah, and I know these are very different sorts of games, but it's kind of it's landing in a spot that has kind of like a unique, the way it's being described and marketed, kind of a unique framework in terms of how it's, what sort of the gameplay offerings are for Victory Road.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I don't think I can like make a proper, really real comparison to like how this game plays to any other game, except like maybe the closest you get is maybe Blitzball, you know.
But yeah, no, thank you for going through the Switch beta for Inazuma 11 Victory Road. And yeah, we're going, the next stage for the beta's, like Josh said, is going to be just kind of open indefinitely for a while. It sounds like they're going to add a separate beta for PC and PS4 players in not too long. That was announced this week, but you know, details are still forthcoming. And then the planned release for this game is still ostensibly set for this year, though I don't know how much confidence we have in that, but it should be playable at least in beta format across all platforms this year at the very least. Yeah. And we kind of described it last week as more of an early access sort of approach to it, where they're going to keep updating it and they might add more story mode snippets or more features to the beta throughout the months. So it'd be an interesting thing to keep on top of.
Yeah, I also wonder like what the mobile experience is going to be like, because it's also announced for mobile devices, and I'm just like, man, this game already has like a really busy UI for like even on a console screen. I can't even imagine what the...
Oh, I forgot it was coming out on mobile.
Yeah, so, you know, so I'm very interested to see what that version of the game looks like, and I wonder if they're planning crossplay between all these platforms eventually on the full release or not. That'd be crazy if so. That'd be like Fortnite levels.
And then, kind of on a similar vein, we'll just keep going, keep this train rolling. Another demo. Well, I know I'm saying demo. Another pre-release access to a playable version of the game.
It's a demo.
Was this released this week. Yeah, this one's explicitly called a demo. And this is for the upcoming PlayStation exclusive, Stellar Blade, which is coming out on April 26th. The demo was officially released yesterday at the time of recording on March 29th. That's sidestepping the fact that the demo was like accidentally made available like a few weeks ago and then like immediately revoked from people who had downloaded it, which was, you could have a tangent conversation about that. Mm-hmm. But here's the real release of the actual demo. Came out yesterday at the time of recording. There's been a lot of impressions of it online, and sounds like Josh also spent some time with Stellar Blade yesterday.
Yeah, this is good. Pretty much starts at the beginning of the game up until like the first real boss encounter, and then there's like what happens after you do that. So this game starts off frame it for the modern audience these days. It starts off with your character and her squad hell diving onto Earth. There's an audio, yeah. There's an alien onslaught. I think the enemy alien race is called the Not Yuba or something like that. And you know, you take the role of a combat android of some sort, and that she's tasked with, you know, defending Earth from the alien threat. And the way this game opens is really funny, because you have like these big ships that where your drop pods deploy from. You know, coming out into Earth's atmosphere, and there's like a lot of lasers from the aliens firing onto those ships, and then in order for the ships to defend themselves, they have like these teeny tiny like frontal shields that only cover their front. So like, what the enemy beams do is like they circle around them and just still fucking kill them. I'm like, okay, these shields do nothing. Congratulations, you've designed a really worthless defense system for like an important aspect of your defense. So you know, a lot of your drop pods fall down. You see that like a lot of your allies on descent are like being wiped out before they can even land. You take the role of Eve. She kind of crash lands by luck onto land. She gets helped out by, you know, another ally, another android alloy, and then they teach you the controls as you're running towards like this tutorial boss, so to speak. And the pace of it is really funny, because a lot of people may have this misconception, it's like, oh, it's a Souls-like, it plays like a Souls-like. I don't think it really isn't, because this has your light and heavy attacks, but there's no stamina meter. It encourages you to be aggressive with your attack strings, because the only way you get resources to do stuff in combat is to be aggressive. So as you're mixing up your light and heavy attacks on enemies, you kind of get this resource, I forgot what it's called, to fire off your abilities called beta skills. And you know, you have like two starter beta skills of like, one's like a pokey stab multiple times, and the other is like a charge slash sort of deal. And another interesting thing is this game is very much emphasizing like perfect parries, some bit of perfect dodges, but you can't guard forever, because you have like almost like a stamina. That's not really a stamina meter. It's a secondary meter where like if it depletes, you start taking damage if you just normally guard something. So you can't guard forever. You have to be on the offense. You have to mix up your offense in there as well to. Because when you hit something, like a lot of like the normal sized enemies do have hit stun, they will react to your hits. So you kind of want to press the offense and make sure that like you're keeping a good balance between like your offensive and defensive tools. So you're never stuck in a situation where like you feel like you have to turtle up. Because if you do that, then like you know you're just gonna die by attrition essentially. So I really like that it does encourage that, like, hey, if you play this as slowly as a Souls-like, I think you'll have a bad time. Because you just cannot keep up your defense forever. It reminds me a lot of, like, Lies of P almost in combat pacing.
I think in the staff chat, people say it's more comparison to Sekiro, I guess. Is that...
I mean, it's not as rhythm gamey as Sekiro, but I can see where people are coming. I'd say it's more like Lies of P more so than Sekiro. So as you kind of learn more about the controls and stuff like that, you learn that there's a skill tree. One of the first things you get in the skill tree is a perfect dodge. So you know some enemy attacks can't be guarded. You have to dodge out of the way. And also when you perfect parry or perfect guard something, enemies have this is how it is Sekiro in this way, where there are little dots on an enemy, and every time you perfect guard or something to like deflect their attack, you'll deplete these little like circular dots on them, and when they're completely depleted, you can do like a really special powerful attack. It'll just do a lot of damage. It won't necessarily like insta kill everything, but it'll, you know, pretty much insta kill like lesser enemies, but like more significant enemies will just do a lot of damage. And this is like called like retribution or something like that. So as you play this demo, you also learn about like I forgot what it was called, but there are certain color coded attacks for incoming attacks. So like for one of them is like, I don't know if it's called a parry. I think it's called a blink, I'm pretty sure. And like if an enemy glows blue, for example, you have to watch like your sword like blink for like a split second, and when you do that, you have to hold like the analog stick up and circle to like blink like to dodge their attack and then like gain like a opportunity counterattack. There's the inverse of this, that they like flash pink, you hold the analog stick the opposite way and circle, and then you like kick them back to counter that kind of attack. So there's a bit of like color coding awareness to like incoming attacks to properly avoid damage from that. And it is a pretty unforgiving game when it comes to like Just initially off the gate, because like enemies do a lot of damage, and like the normal difficulty, you'll probably go down like 3 to 4 hits, and you only have like up to 3 healing items on you at once, and then there's other like different kinds of potions that like you can buy at like the shops. They're like a potion that'll like heal you gradually over time instead of a burst, but this doesn't get filled up. You'd have to like just buy them, manually refill them.
Is it more similar to, I don't know, Demon's Souls and Bloodborne, where you had to grind for potions versus like they restock at like a
bar? No. You do have potions that restock that like heal and burst, but then there's other potions that you can heal that heal differently, that you can, that at least have hard limits too. Like you can only stock up like two of these gradual potions, but for the burst potion that heals up at camps, you initially start out at three. But you can't like farm them indefinitely because they don't drop from enemies. If you want to restock them, you'll have to respawn enemies at camps, much like how Souls does it. It's not like Bloodborne or Demon's Souls where you can like stock up like 99 of them and be like, all right, I'm good. They have pretty hard, strict limits on that and really emphasize, hey, play smartly, you know? Don't fuck around. So I guess that's where people like draw the Souls comparisons, but I think they might be thrown off that, like, hey, but you cannot play this like Souls, even though it's structured all like Souls in some aspects. So you're going through, you know, this tutorial boss, and then some, you know, bad stuff happens. But so you kind of like you kind of do a little bit of a time skip, like to the next day. You find out you were saved by another character called Adam. You both are like kind of are helping each other fight off the threat of these aliens. So you're a lot of the first level is about like exploring this like urban environment and just kind of like, you know, very very early game stage stuff, and like kind of teaching you about there's platforming aspects of the game. There's some like exploring aspects of the game to collect resources to, you know, upgrade your equipment. You can, once you reach like a certain, once you accrue enough experience, you'll get a skill point, and so forth. So for people who don't like yellow paint, I'm sorry, this game has yellow paint. Yeah, I know, it's a hot topic these days, I hear. There's an interesting thing in the game where some enemies and do disappear, and you actually have to like scan the environment to like fish them out. They do like become hidden, and so you have to like kind of activate like this detective vision almost, or scan to see them again. You can
kind of work like those enemies in Armored Core 6 where you have to scan to find them, or is it a bit different?
It's a bit like that. But it's very instantaneous. You just hold down the touchpad, and then it'll do it. It'll take like 1 or 2 seconds, and then you can also use this out of combat to go locate. Hey, there's a crate here. There's funny. It'll actually like highlight in bright yellow where all like if there's any yellow platforms nearby. It'll actually just highlight. Hey, there's a thing you can climb on here. You know, if you want to explore for a bit, go climb here. Pretty much, when you put on the scan thing. So because the yellow paint is a bit faded out in the environment, it could be missed if you're not looking carefully. And then, you know, there's some aspects, like there's some locked chests that you have to use a passcode for. You have to find, like, you know, dead bodies pretty much for the passcode, and so forth. So it's very very basic, like linear stage exploration type stuff, but it works simple enough for it. It's not like amazing, but it's like, it's okay. There's a weird stickiness to the controls, I think, that takes a little bit to get used to. I think it's not really as weighty as what you would expect from like a Souls, but it's also not as loose as like what you'd expect from a Sekiro. I don't know how to best describe, but there's a stickiness of controls that like it takes some time to get used to.
I did hear someone right before you said the word. I did hear someone describe it as weighty. I know the words that were trying to explain how it feels to move in a game can be tricky to like think that. But I kind of get what you mean. I did have one question. I'm not making a judgment call on this, though maybe preempting it, maybe sounds like it. But just the way that this game is described, it's obviously described by the publisher as an action RPG, but it seems like more just action game with a skill tree. Like, what are there like any longer term progression systems, mechanics? And again, I'm not with any judgment, just curious like how the game plays in terms of that sort of thing.
So you don't really upgrade stats the way Souls games are. There's not like attributes that like you put points into, but you do collect materials to like there are regular camps, and there's like some fancier camps that have more functionality, and then these fancier camps, you can like go to like engage at like a table, and then you can do stuff like, hey, enhance my attack power because I have the materials for it, or like give me more potions, up my potion limit because I have the materials for it. So there is some. I'd say the RPG aspect is more on the light end, and like, and that really surfaces only in like maybe attack power. You can find like much like in other games, you can find like certain items that like, hey, collect three of this and you'll get an HP upgrade, you know, like Zelda, and you can do that like with your I don't know if it's called stamina, but that guard meter.
You're over guard.
Yeah, pretty much. You collect three of a resource, and then you'll, you know, get more of that, so forth. And then, of course, when you fill up an experience bar, you get one skill meter, or one skill point, rather. And then you can stack these two, so you can have, like, two skill points, because, like, some nodes will require two skill points. And then you do have to... You can respec, but you do need an item to respec entirely. If you want to go a different way. The cool thing about the skill tree in this game is like when you hover over something, you can actually like load into a training room right away. And like, if you want to test out a skill for yourself hands-on, it was like, how does this skill work? And then you can just like hold square or something to go into a training area. And then it'll give you a pop. It's like, here's how you do the skill. And then you just have like a basic enemy attacking you. And then so you can go test out like, oh, how does this skill work? Oh, it works like this.
That's pretty nice, because I know, you know, normally we say it's pretty awesome if a game shows a little mini video clip of like how the skill is being used.
It does that, and then it also gives you that.
Yeah, it goes above and beyond. It says, if you want to use it, here you go.
Yeah. So like one of the skills that like I found immediately useful early on that I specced into was after a perfect guard. I can hold square to like teleport behind them and then try and go for like a follow-up stab attack immediately. It's not like super spammable because like it does share resources with like the beta skills, and a lot of enemies do like fast follow-up attacks. Like you have to like perfect parry or like dodge them multiple times. So it's not like something I can do like on every single hit that's coming, but like for stuff like the first real boss, for example, was like, it was immediately useful for that. So like the story portion of the demo is like, you know, it's about maybe an hour or so, give or take. It's not too long. After that though, you do unlock a thing called Boss Challenge. And Boss Challenge is really cool because it's basically, here's this harder boss that you're about to face. It's a different boss. But you have like a beefed up character, so a lot of it's like their skill trees are already maxed out. So you have a lot of like just later upgrades to like experiment and play with and like get a better feel for like how the game is actually played at like these, eventually at like these higher later forms of progression already unlocked for you. So it's a pretty challenging boss. That took you a few tries, but it better showcases like what the pace of this game is and what it kind of asks of players. You know, like in that boss, if you were to like play that game like a typical Souls boss, you would get demolished because this boss is very, very aggressive, but it's very susceptible to like getting staggered as well. So you kind of have to keep up the offense and try not to like let it breathe too much throughout the fight. So I think that was a really, really cool way for the developers to like kind of give players a better idea of like what you could expect from this game, and not like, because it's hard to like showcase like the combat of your game with only just like the opening chapter. It's just introducing.
Now, if I remember right, and this is more, I only ask this because it's been more and more common recently.
Yeah.
Does the demo progress carry over into the main game in any respect?
If you beat the first boss, if you beat the first real boss, I believe that you do get the option to save data transfer. So you do have to beat the story portion of it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. So that's my understanding. But yeah, that's pretty much the Stellar Blade demo in a nutshell. And obviously, you know, that for people who want fan service, this is definitely a game that's a lot of eye candy as well. And that's what they wanted to make, and that's totally fine. This game, instead of having different weapons, that they already said in previous interviews and showcases that this game will have a lot of different outfits for people to collect and customize their character. It's pretty it's pretty funny because in the settings and when you go to settings in the game tab, the first one that you go, there's the standard do you want to auto loot items, do you want to do this, and then one of the options is ponytail length. And you can have it long or short, and it's okay, sure. It's a very goofy.
I hope I pronounce his name right. John Lineman from Digital Foundry he was tweeting on his social that he really loved the demo, and someone brought up the ponytail length, and he's like, "Tress FX is back, baby." remember, it was a decade ago at this point.
It was 2013. I remember when I first built my first gaming PC, that one of the most demanding graphical settings in a video game was Tress FX for Tomb Raider 2013.
That's right. Yeah.
Which, if you ran it on an NVIDIA GPU at the time, you basically had half the frame rate.
And then Witcher 3 have the NVIDIA equivalent or something? I know they had Hairworks option.
Hairworks.
Yeah. And I don't remember, were those both abandoned or just baked into, the normal stuff? I don't know. They were giving these always, fancy,
Hairworks names. Was part of NVIDIA's GameWorks initiative, which was abandoned, 5 or 6 years ago, because there was some pretty shady stuff that NVIDIA was doing behind the scenes with it that kind of culminated, came to a head when they had a whole thing where there was, a period of time for, a couple of months where NVIDIA basically refused to let certain companies sell their GPUs if they didn't have a separate brand for essentially AMD graphics cards. So I don't know if people remember that, but there was a whole deal where ASUS cards, there was a couple of months where you could not buy an ROG AMD graphics card, and they basically had to spin up a totally new brand that is dead now, of course, because pretty much everyone called out NVIDIA for this and they relented. But I believe it was Ares, A-R-E-Z instead of ROG.
Well, sorry to get on there. Ponytail length.
For the tangent.
That's fine.
I mean, I'm the one that brought it up, and here I'll just bring up another tangent. Yeah. It'll be relevant whenever Final Fantasy 16's PC release gets more information. I remember the 15 PC release, they partnered with NVIDIA, and I remember them saying look how fuzzy the beasts are because we have NVIDIA Hairworks in our Final Fantasy 15 PC port or whatever. I don't remember what they're called, but the fuzzy ox type things in that game. Anyways.
Yeah, that's a fun option. And there's also some neat small accessibility options they allow you to kind of highlight your character model and things in the environment and your enemies in a certain color. There's two preset color options. So if you're having a hard time kind of seeing things in the environment, they do have options like that in there. So it's a pretty robust settings menu that they have there as well. So I think it's gonna be. Right from what I've played so far, I think it's going to be a pretty solid game. We'll see how the full game shakes out. I think it's really cool that yes, it's self-admittedly they already said in an interview that it's very production of this game was very very much inspired by Nier Automata because the director was very much into Nier Automata, and you can kind of feel that and every you see already a lot of comparisons to this game through Sekiro, Lies of P, Nier Automata. And I think that's totally fine, because they wanted to make a game that they themselves enjoy and hopefully players will enjoy. I think this is a really cool...
it's earnest. So they say we really enjoyed Nier Automata and we thought it had some neat ideas and here's our take.
Did they have the same music team as well from the Nier?
I don't know if they have the same music team, but the music is very similar in style.
I could have sworn I heard they got knocked. Was it Monaka or whatever?
Yeah, they might have that on Monaka. I don't know. I didn't actually go check what their the music staff was for that for that game. But it's coming out soon. It's end of the month.
I'm very interested.
Coming out on April 26th, famously sparse release window.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't kind of like expecting like a Souls-like. I was more expecting maybe like a Bayonetta-style gameplay. That's kind of like
no, I wouldn't say that this is not as combo-centric as something like a Devil May Cry or Bayonetta. I don't think it's that's the thing. I don't really think it plays like Nier either, because Nier is very like Nier Automata is very fast, fluid, and like it some aspects is very combo centric too because it's from Platinum, and like kind of the animation is kind of like all smoothly go together, but at the expense of weight, right? On this game, it's like the movement is sticky, the combat is weightier than something like Nier Automata. It does feel a little bit more heavy in that
which isn't good or bad. It just feels different.
Yeah, and the hits on like Nier Automata, like they feel very impactful. Like, every like impact with the enemy with your weapon, like it does feel like there's an oomph to it that Nier Automata didn't have.
Mm-hmm. I know this so is kind of like a tangent.
Nier Automata.
Yeah,
go ahead, Chow.
I was gonna say this is kind of a tangent, but one of the reasons I really hate Final Fantasy 15 is the way that Noctis swings his sword. It feels there's no weight to it. No, sound effect has no impact. There's just no weight to that.
I mean, go for it.
I was speaking of games that have like oomph to it. Like we talked about this primarily on the last week of the podcast, but over the last 7 days, I've been playing Dragon's Dogma 2, as many of us have been, and that game is very like heavy and clunky.
Yes,
but in a way that I don't mind at all. It feels like really weighty, but when you finally get you knock over your ogre and you stab it in the face, like it feels pretty damn good.
Oh yeah,
it's funny how like most classes in Dragon's Dogma 2 are super weighty, but then you play Thief and it's like, man, I'm just tearing through everything fees.
Oh, kinda... no, I haven't unlocked it yet, but
Thief is so good. I love Thief.
I haven't unlocked it. It's a launch vocation. It's a starting vocation.
Oh, you didn't choose it at the beginning. You mean?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, wasn't it fighter archer?
Fighter archer
mage. And mage.
Oh, okay. I haven't played it as it then.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy how Thief is like arguably the best vocation in the game. It's kind of ridiculous.
I think every vocation is definitely viable, but I think Thief is one of the most cracked ones. Like my I finished Dragon's Dogma 2 as of yesterday, and I pretty much not maxed everything, but I maxed most of the vocations that I did except like the magic classes. And my final like tactics, end game tactics, was with Thief and activating the Feint, so they have like invincibility at the cost of stamina bar depleting, and then that Blades of the Pyre or Fury or whatever skill. So just like so, and that skill like hurts you. So like so to negate that, I just activate Feint and then spam that, and it does an absurd amount of damage. I'm like, oh my god, this fucking class is insane.
Did you start the Dragon Plague quest line?
I think me, Adam, and James have figured out how this Dragon Plague thing works. We won't spoil it here, but that people have been talking about it. I think we finally figured out like, okay, this is probably the most reliable way this thing starts.
If you're unsure, just chuck your pawns off a cliff, just to be sure.
Yep.
So yeah,
that's a good posture to have for other things you're unsure about.
Yeah, I refreshed Adam's pawn yesterday, and then I got the Dragon's Plague tutorial. I'm like, well, Adam, I'm chucking your pawn off a cliff.
But yeah, no, thanks, Josh, for carrying the first part of this podcast to talk about Inazuma 11 Victory Roads beta and the Stellar Blade demo. Both of those are openly available, so if you have a Switch for now for Inazuma 11 or PS5, the exclusive platform for Stellar Blade, you can play either of those, and then the Stellar Blade demo will carry over to the full release in just under a month. And then the last major game we're going to talk about here, we also were able to go hands-on. This was a preview event that was offered by Square Enix for the upcoming Visions of Mana. So this we put up a lot of features up on the website regarding Visions of Mana preview opportunities. So James, and I believe it was a while ago, James, and I'll hand the mic off to you shortly, that you're able to go hands-on at Square Enix's offices with Visions of Mana. And then alongside of that at PAX East, which just wrapped up a few weeks ago, we had Scott White there able to attend and play Visions of Mana. And then in addition to that, Square Enix themselves have just revealed, you know, more information and gameplay footage about Visions of Mana. So, and then lastly, we got an interview opportunity as well. So lots of coverage of the game up on the site. But to start out, we'll hand it off to James about your time with Visions of Mana. How long ago did you play this? My brain is funny that it was actually quite a while ago.
Well, it was this month. It was on the 13th. So basically, they had a LA-based preview event for the game about a week before the PAX East stuff. From what I remember, it was a fairly limited preview event thing. It was just where, hey, we know that there's some local LA media and we can just have like some folks play. So that was actually the first time anyone got the chance to preview the game, was the week before PAX. So it was about an hour long, and it was basically the two demos that Scott ended up playing at PAX East as well. And there was a more linear demo, and then there was like an open-ended, like open field demo. And yeah, I mean, I don't know really where to start. Just seems to be pretty neat. I'm kind of interested to see how the full game will feel, because there's lots of little bits and pieces in those demos that kind of alludes to the idea of, oh yeah, there's going to be a lot of reasons to come back to previous levels or previous areas when you unlock more elemental vessels, because there's more things that you'll be able to do in these areas once you've like obtained these abilities. So
did you play the Trials of Mana remake or no?
Yes, I played a bit of the Trials of Mana remake. I have not finished it. I actually picked it up to play a bit of it before I did the Visions of Mana preview, because I wanted to have at least some of that knowledge heading in, which was the right decision, because even in the interview, you can see I asked, this feels like it's very much kind of an extension of a lot of the ideas that are in the Trials of Mana remake, and Oyamada-san just outright said, yeah, that was pretty much the intention.
I think that's the right call. You know, I think that Trials of Mana remake was very widely praised and received for the most part. Like, it was just like, wow, they really nailed it, because that is such a, like, Seiken Densetsu 3 was such a beloved, like, entry in the series, so it was important to get that.
I think it's probably, like, the best Mana game that they have in a very long time. I was going to say, is there a character that speaks like a child in this game?
Thankfully not, though there is a dragon girl that speaks with a southern accent.
Yeah, she has like a southern drawl. I was watching some of the new trailers and gameplay from other outlets who did this, and it's kind of an interesting event, because even for Japanese outlets, they showed like the English build of this game. So like there's like nothing like Japanese voices yet until like, you know, later.
Japanese subtitles on the bottom, which is
I wonder if the English dub is the original dub for this game then, which would be very interesting.
And speaking of dubs, I don't have the details in front of me, but I know like the dub studio that did Trials of Mana was not a usual dub studio that Square Enix
you
uses.
Could tell.
And you it was like, tell. And I'm that game had like a surprisingly poor dub, like that wouldn't even fly 10, 15 years ago. It was really poor, honestly.
It was rough.
So
I think they're shaping up to be much better.
But yeah, this almost feels reminiscent of like the old Xbox 360 days. Not the dub, but just the fact that it's like a Japanese game on. I know it's not an Xbox exclusive, but like it's got the Xbox marketing, English seemingly presenting first. So
good point. Yeah, I think it's really cool. Like, from what I've seen, and part of like what you were mentioning in the previews on the site is like how these elemental vessels will, like, even though it's the same elemental vessels, it'll have like three different unique classes depending on like how which character they're slotted into. And each of these classes, like in Trials, all have like different movesets and abilities placed into them.
Yeah, like I think the best example I have from the preview, and I forget the name of the dragon girl. I apologize. I could look it up.
Han? Oh, I don't know.
There's a lot of names.
Yeah, but all I'll say is that for one example, if you give her the wind elemental, she kind of has like a dancer type outfit with like these fan, like wind fans, and then it's like kind of a ranged attacker a bit that way, which is interesting. And then another class you can play as her is funnily enough, they give her a spear, and it's just like, what if we made the dragon girl a dragoon?
Yeah, that seems awesome. Yeah, I saw a little bit of the dancer footage. It's really cool because she incorporates like her pet, her partner, into like the attacks as well, so you can see her riding it in some of the attack.
I believe this girl's name is Karina.
Karina.
That, yep. Mm-hmm. But I will say one thing that Scott mentioned in his preview that I do agree with, that I hope does get kind of fixed up by launch, is that the lock-on and how it interacts with the camera is pretty bad in the preview build we played. So there's a hope that it will be improved a lot come launch. Which it commits, should.
It commits an unfortunately common action RPG cardinal sin where like your lock-on, it shares the, you know, when you're trying to swap locks, it's the same right analog stick as like your camera. So like if you're trying to, you know, move your camera around, you're shifting lock-on targets as well if you're locked on. And this is like something that like a lot of action RPGs to do. It's like,
oh, that happened in a game earlier this year. I can't remember what it was. I just wanted to like tweak the camera, but I moved the stick. Like, okay, I want to move the camera left. Oh crap! I just targeted a different enemy.
It wasn't Granblue, was it? I think there was
Granblue. I think Granblue.
Was maybe Granblue. Yeah.
I was trying to think. Does it have an option for that? But that might have been for Rebirth, and then Granblue didn't have that option.
Granblue has one like the worst. Like my favorite ones in like chapter 3 when you're like trying to go to the mine and there's like an omen stone where you're fighting these wyverns, and then you know, lock on for some reason would target this freaking goblin that's like 20 miles away, and it always focus on that and it fucks up your camera, so you just better turn it off. You know, it's like
I don't remember having a lot of lock on issues with Rebirth, but yeah, Granblue. But the Granblue that I played in the last month has mostly been post game, which is mostly not always
one enemy, boss
fights, boss focus. So
and I think that's where that game shines. And so
hopefully Visions of Mana like fixes that up, because that is a big potential issue for sure.
Yeah. I was gonna say I have one issue with Trials of Mana, which is mostly the AI. They always get killed by line of sight attacks from bosses. Like if there's a red line, they just get hit by it. Like 99% of the time. Does this game have ways of addressing this, or did you not get to see a boss encounter?
We did get to do a boss encounter with the giant praying mantis that you could see in the original the Game Awards trailer. Yeah. I'd say that it worked like the AoE stuff just fine. Didn't have any complaints with it. Cool. One really interesting thing, kind of on a tangent from the game, is that so the preview builds we played were on PS5, and specifically we played it in the graphics mode, which targets 4K, but also is targeting 60 FPS.
Oh, okay. That's a nice surprise.
There was performance dips, but I'd say that it was like maybe just a little bit worse than the performance dips in like 16's performance mode.
Okay.
Like around launch. So they still have a couple of months to patch it up. But I asked and I didn't get an answer to this, but it's like, okay, so if the graphics mode is targeting 4K 60, does that mean performance mode is going to be 120 FPS on PS5? Or what are we doing? Yeah, it's like they didn't have an answer, but it's like, it's legit. Like, that's the obvious question. If it's like, okay, so there's a graphics and a performance mode, but graphics mode's already targeting 4K 60. So what does the performance mode bring?
Very interesting. Yeah.
Also, game will be Steam Deck verified. So even though it's not coming to Nintendo Switch, which if you read the interview, read between the lines, this is probably coming to Switch too. At least at launch, you will be able to play it on a handheld, just not a Nintendo handheld.
Yeah, it's looking shaping up to be really cool. I think one of the funniest clips that I found was like, I don't know which elemental the main character had on them, but it transformed into like a lancer type, and it looks like a monster hunter or a lancer from Monster Hunter. Like straight up, like a lot of high pokes and low pokes.
That's a fun class. I will say that the combat I'm of two minds of, but it's a little too early to say, because in the more linear demo, the combat felt a bit more fleshed out with what you could do with like delayed button inputs and whatnot. Ironically enough, some of those inputs just were completely unavailable to me in the open section, like the open demo, which I think it might be a thing where like the combat like gets more depth as you go through the story, which would make sense. It just meant that it was a little
hard. That's always a difficult balance.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to get a perfect kind of feel for where the combat's going to land overall.
Yeah, so makes sense. We still don't have a release date for this. So this is still summer, right?
Yeah, still summer. Yeah. I wonder if at this point they're not announcing a date because they want to make sure that they don't have it right next to something else that's really big. My guess, I made the joke a few weeks ago where it's like, watch it release the same day as Trails Through Daybreak. I would not be shocked if that actually happened.
That seems like the ongoing mantra for this year of game releases. It's like, we will release all beside each other. Except Elden Ring DLC. If it's Elden Ring DLC, get the fuck back. We need to fucking flee to another date.
It's like, man, that's
move it
it's
up, still, or, up or later.
It's still
on
crazy. I don't think I've seen that happen with RPG releases. Like,
it's really
ever.
Funny. Yeah. Everyone's like, flee. Fleeing.
And then one other last bit of tidbit of information, and Kite covered this, but I know it's something that Adam, I know all of us, but Adam in particular always is interested in, as we talk about when Square Enix announces a title, who's actually making it? And we learned this week that it was NetEase's Ouka Studio, O-U-K-A, which I guess was one of NetEase's first Japan-based studios, is working with Square Enix on Visions of Mana. So kind of an interesting, it's not their first project, but they were established in 2020, so still relatively new. So I don't know, pretty cool.
I believe this is the first game we know of from a NetEase Japanese console studio. NetEase has other console games, but they're Chinese studios. I hope I have that right. Mm-hmm. Like, out of their like new studios that they've been establishing in Japan, this is the first one where we have like a title. And it's for Square Enix.
Yeah. Kite did a great write-up about this studio making the game, and did note that we've seen you know various NetEase studios in development, like Rare Winds Meet, Cygnus Enterprises, and Project Mugen, but since staff like Toshihiro Nagoshi and Hiroyuki Kobayashi left for NetEase, we don't really know what, we know they're working on something, but we don't know what. They haven't announced it yet, and like you said, Adam, this is like kind of the first known one we have out of that effort of NetEase kind of recruiting like Japanese developers for a console project.
And it's interesting because like clearly the longtime Mana series producer Oyamada is involved with Visions of Mana, but like NetEase is making the game, which is, and it looks like it's borrowing a lot of ideas from the Trials of Mana remake, but that was Xeen, X-E-E-N, so that was like a different development studio. So like Square Enix is, to their credit, they're able to like leverage these partnerships to produce quite a lot of, you know, work that's generally good. Like we talked about 2022, the year of Square Enix. Was it 2022, the year that Square Enix released like 13 games in 12 months? Each with a different partnership studio.
It was literally more like 13 games in 13 weeks.
Oh, really? Yeah. And we talked about like, and sometimes it's been to like, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later. Like, it's not always been the best result to juggle that many, but like sometimes, like with Gem Drops and Star Ocean 2 Remake, it ends up making something really quite damn good. So hopefully the same is true with this new studio and Visions of Mana.
For this sound, Ouka Studios, new surrounding it was like how it was like unveiled was really interesting because the director of Visions of Mana, Ryosuke Yoshida, made a tweet in English announcing that like, hey, our studio is making it, and that kind of like blew the doors open. It's like, okay, what's going on here? And Yoshida's like resume is interesting because like he first worked on like Lost Planet 2 as like an assistant planner on that, but then he went on to design some fucking like cool games. He was the game one of the game designers for Monster Hunter Generations, and also was a designer for Devil May Cry 5. You know, that's quite a pretty cool resume that you have there.
This is CEO of Ouka Studio.
I don't know if
it's the director of the game.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where yeah. Oyamada is the Square Enix producer.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's really neat. Yeah. So there's basically ex-Capcom working on this game pretty much.
And yeah, like the team said, very cool to see the preview opportunities from both the hands-on at Square Enix in LA and then from PAX Was it East Boston concluded? And then, of course, the game is slated for summer of this year, though we don't have a specific release date, coming out on PlayStation, PC, also Xbox for this one, and potentially Nintendo something down the line. We'll see. With that, I think that covers all... Nope, one more game we wanted to cover before we go into the news section. A game that we talked about getting an update last week and then released over the last 7 days. We'll hand the microphone off to Chow. Talk about your latest escapades and Honkai Star Rail playing the... was it the 2.1 update?
Yeah. I
saw lots of people sharing their polls to try to get the new character.
I will.
You failed.
Yeah, I had to. Well, like, the thing is, this character is actually, like, super broken, if you wailed. If you just pull her, she's trash. But if you wailed, then she's, like, the ultimate character. Pardon?
What's her name?
What was her name again?
Akurion, or okay. Yomi, if you play in Japanese.
Okay, so let's take this step by step. Why is she... useless if you only pulled one of her, but yet becomes broken if you pulled, I guess, multiple of her. I don't know how many times you would need to pull her.
You need like two dupes, because it makes it a lot more easier to build her, and next thing you know, her ultimate's a lot easier, more accessible, which is her main gimmick. It's her ultimate, it does so much damage.
Okay, so basically, if you pull two of her, it'll unlock like a passive trait on her to make building up her ultimate easier.
Yeah. So okay. You basically want two dupes. Like, look, even Zach has two dupes of her, too.
He's talking about Zachary.
I don't spend on gacha games whatsoever, so that tells you everyone's excited about this character. But, you know, I was originally going to, like, not pull her, but mm-hmm. then you're like, wait, the numbers are too high. I can't skip this.
You know, like that stock footage, like doing your own taxes, where you got like the glasses on, you've got like your receipt printer, and you're at like the kitchen table, and you're like, the numbers are too high, I must pull this character. That's how I'm imagining Chow now.
Look at me, that will swing me over from waifu is meta. Meta is more important than waifu in most of the gacha games I play, okay?
There you go.
Like, you know, I said I wasn't going to roll on male characters, but if they're meta,
if the numbers are high, were sufficiently high enough, you would do it.
I'll change my mind.
There you go.
So, yeah, so I did that. Not a good decision, okay? Just to warn people out there. But there was that, and there was the entire 2.1 story, which is actually really good. It's, I feel HoYoverse's biggest weakness still is their dialogue. I think it gets a little too long-winded, which is hard to... carry the point. It needs to be a lot more concise, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like HoYoverse's weakness. But this story is, like, great. It kind of sells you on that guy that I said that was kind of like a scumbag. Aventurine, or whatever his name is. I kind of figure out, it was like, oh, wait. It gives you his backstory, how he was, like, a slave, and then how he was, like, sold to, like, this IPC, which is, like, this international... I forget what their name stands for, but they basically go around and basically, like, force planets to, like, sell it to them, and they would own the planet, right? That's kind of, like, their goal, right? Mm-hmm. And his, like, the cool thing about this chapter in the story is that you get to, like, switch to, like, different people's point of view. You could, like, play on his point of view, and then now you get to know how this character works, and you get to see how he thinks, right? And then it'll switch back to your protagonist's point of view. Then it switches to, like, a Kurgan's point of view, which is kind of cool.
I saw someone, I don't know, I think it was for Star Rail, but I don't know, because I just scrolled past it on my Twitter feed, but compare it to Trails into Reverie with the walk system, or whatever it was called in Japan, where you change the viewpoint.
If it was called Cross Story, then they changed it to Trails into Walk.
Yeah, but anyways, that was the comparison that I think I saw made with this update. Is that valid or not quite like that?
Yeah, I think talk about it from your perspective. It's pretty valid. Yeah, this story is all about him basically adventuring. How his basically this guy is blessed with like very good luck, or maybe cursed, depending on how you look at it. You know, because he has a very kind of like tragic backstory that looks like it came out of a shonen story or something, right? But you know. He's very blessed, so his entire personality trait is that he's gonna gamble on everything. Like he's basically all in, and he never loses a bet. That's kind of like his trait, right? And yeah, like it's all about like learning about his backstory, and then there are some twists that you won't see coming. But a lot of people say, "Oh, I already saw that coming because they read the leaks." Because somehow, if you read like I don't know, like Weapons Light Cone leak, like just the name of it gives it away of like certain plot spoilers. So some people were like disappointed about, you know, about that. But you know, let's just say if you never look into the leaks, it's like, oh, I guess it's much more hidden. I think it's still like the major thing that happens in the story. It wasn't really spoiled, like who the actual murderer is behind all the scenes, because this story arc is more like a murder mystery, and you try to solve who could be the murderer. And it's actually not that obvious. It's kind of pretty well hidden, and they give you enough clues that you can kind of guess who it is. But
is it revealed in this update, or is it?
Yeah, it's actually revealed who the killer is. You know, there's a guy that's going around killing people, and you don't know who it is, and it's kind of like the least obvious person, but they give you enough clues that, oh, that makes sense, you know?
Is there like a fail state of like, hey, if you, like, does it actually give you an option like, hey, you have to guess who it is?
And no, it doesn't. It's just part of the story, right? At the end, it's like, this guy just reveals himself. Like, oh, so here are the guy that's behind it.
Sounds like it was done pretty well, because you don't want it to be too obvious. Like, how could we not tell it was this guy that, acted evil?
How could it be not the gas station attendant?
But yeah, and then but also you don't want to be like, oh, we're gonna make it the person you least expect, but you expect them because it's the person you least expect. Like, it's a hard needle to thread sometimes, where it's like, oh, they made a person that I didn't expect but makes sense. So it seems like they did it pretty well. Oh, that's the way you're describing it.
So yeah, that's how I look at the story. It's a great update, I would say. Like, if you're talking about the new modes, there's not really new modes. There's like that Itadaki Street that we talk about, where every day you log in, you get some coins, you keep rolling and trying to earn as much cash as you can, and then you throw in the cash to contribute, you know, into this pool, and how much cash there is in total is like how much rewards you get. So that's the first one. And the other one is you just work as a bartender and mix drinks for people, or these robots that just kind of talk you down for some stupid reason, and you're just mixing drinks for them to hear their sob stories, I guess. That's the other event. Which is okay. I mean, it's...
I still keep on laughing at, like, flashback a week ago. Chao's like, you know what? Akarion's gonna be bad because I don't like Enmity, and, you know, it's just...
I don't like Nihility, but these numbers...
Or Nihility, sorry.
These numbers don't lie.
It's not gonna be a good character. Who cares about Nihility? I'll just pick like get her once, and that's it. I'll get it. Whatever. Who cares about Akarion? There we are. Fucking
numbers changes the man. Okay.
Well, we're sorry that you lost your bet to get higher numbers.
Nah, man.
You didn't believe hard enough. That's why.
That's why I don't have good luck in this game anymore.
That's it. Game's over.
Well, and with that, we've covered the update to Honkai Star Rail, the previews for Visions of Mana, and then, of course, the demo / betas for Inazuma 11 and Stellar Blade. So quite the variety here for our last podcast in March. And then a lot of the updates in the news this week talk about, you know, the release date for the Stellar Blade demo, plus the new platforms being added to the Inazuma 11 beta later in the month, or they didn't explicitly say when it's going to come out, but presumably soon. So not a whole lot of other updates, but we'll go through a few of the dates that we do have here. We talked about this very briefly with the Star Ocean, the second story. I think I accidentally screwed up the link here, but Star Ocean, the second story, the remaster from late last year that we've all thought pretty highly of, is getting a content update, which is kind of surprising. So they're calling this like a 1.1 update that adds a new difficulty mode called Chaos. It adds new like illustrations for certain major characters in the story, like new portrait art.
I'm going to say major then, characters. let's not get ahead of ourselves.
not major characters, but like pretty like side characters that I would not be surprised like if they had the portrait to begin with. Like, okay. I think one of them is like I forget her name.
Alan.
There's Alan.
I mean,
there's Alan, Marianne.
He's kind of important.
Yeah, Clyde.
Yeah.
But yeah,
girl,
these are side characters.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. And then like new item creation. They didn't detail what. They just said, you know, new item creation.
Yeah, there's new equipment. Yeah, they added new equipment for item creation.
And my guess is that might be in service of this new difficulty mode, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a date for this?
It's already out.
All right, yeah. It's already out. Sorry about that. I was looking for a date, and that explains why I don't see one. It's because it's already out. So, Adam, are you going to update your item creation guide?
Am I going to update my item list?
Oh boy.
I don't know.
I don't want to deal with reading comments anymore.
It's kind of crazy how this was already like pretty well like established as the best version of the second story, and then it's like, yeah, we decided that we were going to make it even better. And it's like, man, like I feel like people were already pretty like confident that it was going to be a good remake before it even came out, but it's kind of crazy how like I don't think anyone expected it to be this good.
My favorite part of this little news blurb, newsletter, whatever you call it, for this new update is when they talk about the new chaos difficulty. They show a screen cap of like a battle with Reyna fighting just a mook on Earth difficulty. It's just, and she's alive, and then they say chaos difficulty. It's like the same battle, but she's dead. It's just like that's all they change between the two pictures. It's like in chaos difficulty, you will die.
They do about five times the damage, probably.
Yeah, and they talk about new, what is it called when you summon someone
assault
else?
Actions.
Ability. Yeah, new assault actions.
Basically, the primary group, the Ten Wise Men, the primary antagonists, if you beat they're now new, offered as raid enemies. If you beat their raid enemies, they actually like give you an item so you can call upon them as assault actions now. So they have new assist attacks, pretty much.
All right. Cool. So here's the real question. Obviously, I've seen a bunch of people kind of like ask for something akin to this, and I agree with them. What PlayStation 1 JRPG should Gem Drops do next?
Vagrant Story.
Xenogears.
My money's on Vagrant Story all the way.
I think Valkyrie Profile would make sense because isn't the main reason because there are a bunch of ex-Tri-Ace folks, so it would make sense. Yeah.
Profile thing is really weird because of the fucking Lendith PS4 release that came out like
it's based on the PSP version. Yeah,
it's based on the PSP version, and just like, but it's only exclusive to PlayStation, and like we never heard about it again after like kind of almost shadow dropped.
Wasn't that thing you had to like pre-order like Valkyrie Elysium to get or something?
If you pre-ordered Valkyrie Elysium, you got it for free, or it was like in a special edition of some sort, or you could buy it separately.
Okay, yeah, it was sold separately too. It's just that one is just a strange re-release because I was like, it was the most unceremonious re-release for that game.
And they obviously didn't put enough care to it. So.
It's still fun because, like, I would say it's still like probably the mobile version of Valkyrie Profile that's like kind of quote unquote the best.
But anyways, yeah, I would say Xenogears for me, but I'm actually pretty sold on like a Vagrant Story if there is a Vagrant Story. I do want to play Vagrant Story in some
Vagrant
form.
Vagrant Story is fantastic. I mean, I think that game absolutely deserves a second chance.
It's one of the first games to get a perfect score in Famitsu back in the day, and people were like, what the hell is this shit?
You know what? I agree. It's a really good game. It is a very odd game, but it is a very good game.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see if they do it, though.
Yeah, I'm excited for whatever Gem Drops decides to, like, whatever, like, remaster, HD, remake, re-release, whatever thing they do next. Like, I hope they're doing something, and I hope I'm looking forward to it whenever they announce
it. What if they change their mind and do a Blue Sphere remake?
Fuck it, let's go.
Yeah, I've seen some people say that they actually kind of want maybe Gem Drops to make Star Ocean 7 and just have it in this art style, which I wouldn't be... like opposed to that.
I mean, they look, man. I don't know. Tri-Ace's fascination with their doll models for their characters, which is like a very. It feels like an intentional aesthetic design decision. It's like
I do not like the doll face.
I can see where they're coming from. Like,
I will say that like it wasn't perfect by any means. But I think Divine Force was all right.
Yeah,
it was all right.
Yeah, I think so too. I actually don't think it's terrible. It's actually a good Star Ocean game in a while.
It's no integrity and faithlessness.
Which is a good thing if you haven't played that video game, if you're listening to this podcast.
It'll come out on PC eventually.
I hope it doesn't.
So it'd be the first game till the end of time, and so all the odd numbered titles of Star Ocean didn't come on PC.
Wait, are you sure?
The first game, the first Star Ocean didn't come to PC.
Yeah, 4 did.
Four did, and until the end of time was 3, and Star Ocean 5 was Integrity and Faithlessness. So that's all the odd numbered titles for Star Ocean didn't come to PC.
Mm.
So what you're right. saying is Star Ocean 7 cannot be good.
Then. That's right. Yeah, it can't come to PC. That's it.
Continuing down the release dates. On April 18th, we'll get the second of, I believe, 3 planned DLCs for Fate Samurai Remnant. Now, I was talking to Adam before the podcast about, like, okay, what's in this DLC? I was trying to parse the press release, but I'm having difficulty figuring out, like, what this DLC is. And then Adam kind of tried to explain it to me and said, we're not supposed to know.
Exactly.
What's in this DLC. Yep.
It is really weird.
So maybe Adam, explain what I mean by that.
I mean, all they gave, they didn't show a single screenshot or clip or anything of this DLC. All they showed was not even the title of the logo of the DLC, but a partial logo of the DLC. But some of it is like literally scribbled out. So it's like redacted. You do not know.
So I wanted to read up on this so that I could be like, yeah, I saw the trailer and this is what it seems like it's adding. So I could speak to it and like, wait, what
you
what
spoke
is
on it? That's it. You spoke on it.
Hooray. The first DLC, I believe Adam played it. That was mostly like a combat challenge, or what did that one add?
It was pretty much like an arena challenge.
Mm-hmm. And there's no inclination with the second DLC, whether it's going to be more of the same or slightly different.
No one has no idea. Just don't know. Yeah. All they said, like, it's coming on this date. The name of it is, you
something
know.
Something Sword Chronicles.
Yep. Bloop. Sword Chronicles. It's like, what the fuck does that mean? So.
Yep, and it's coming out on the on 18th of April, so in like 3 weeks.
That would be funny if like they showed nothing else, it's just this, and then no one knows until like they actually play it for themselves on that date. Actually, that'd be really funny, and I hope they do that. They just
store page shows nothing. It's explains nothing.
Everything's weighted out.
You want to buy this? Can the DLC be bought separately, or is it only as a package?
I don't know, actually.
But anyways, on Steam or wherever, they just say, we're not telling you what this is, but give us $8 if you want it.
Yeah, let me go check real fast. Then go to Fate Samurai Remnant on Steam. Yeah, you can buy them separately. There's a separate entry for the first DLC. So. All
right. In May, we are getting the Western release date for the newest Neptunia game. This is Neptunia Game Maker Revolution. And again, I wanted to try to tee myself up to be like, all right, what is this exactly? This looks like it is a spinoff involving adult Neptune dealing with a warring states period between the three game making entities.
Do you understand how little that
I understand things. Because it's still not a mainline entry. It's is the fact that it's adult Neptune interesting at all?
I think that's supposed to be.
I don't know if it's adult Neptune because there's I forgot her name exactly, but this is an existing character that was like introduced in like the third mainline game that was a separate character from Neptune. But I forgot her name. But she was a cool character, I remember, but that's it.
But yeah, so this game did come out last year in Japan, so it's a known quantity in that respect. But coming out on May 14th for PlayStation and Switch this year.
Are you picking it up?
I will see what Nathan has to say about it.
Gotta get their Neptune.
Will you be picking it up, Josh?
I don't know. Will you be picking it up?
No.
Look, man, I'm not your parent.
Someday we'll get a Neptune expert here to explain us what these games are about.
Yeah, who?
I wonder what the HD stands for in HD Kieran.
Surely it's not high definition.
It's high definition?
We also learned a little bit about the limited edition, which has a steelbook cover, soundtrack CD, and some other extra stuff. And we have all the details of that on the news post coming from CompileHeart. Also in May, we're getting a multiplayer update for Cassette Beasts, which seems pretty neat. I did play the original game last year when it first launched, not the DLC or anything. I don't know how much multiplayer would add to this, but the trailer shows that it looks pretty fully featured, like up to 8 characters on the same like overview screen, and there's like multiplayer raid battles, borrowing from the more recent like Pokemon kind of ideas. So it seems like definitely like a meaty update for the game, and really cool to see that they're getting enough support for the game to continue to support it a year after it released. We have a release date for Wuthering Waves, which is the project from Kuro Games that did Punishing Grey Raven. That'll be releasing worldwide on PC and mobile devices on May 22nd.
So what's the definition of Wuthering?
Most people are pretty hyped about it because it feels like, what is it? It's a Genshin while fixing all the problems of Genshin.
There we go. It's a Genshin killer. There we go.
Just
like Halo killers and WoW killers, you know?
I don't expect this game to kill Genshin, but I hope that they step up their game, you know, after this game is launched.
We're a little bit less bloodthirsty now. We don't call anything killers, we just say like.
Oh, right.
It's not going to kill Genshin, it's just a Genshin like.
Imagine back in the day they called it Halo likes and WoW likes.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true. It has like similar-ish art style. But I don't know, not really. Like, I look at this and I don't immediately think Genshin, but I can maybe see it.
But the coolest thing that they did was that they kind of like redesigned like all their characters because people were not happy how they looked. Just like redo like the whole thing from scratch just to like please like the people.
From like its original reveal.
Yeah.
So they had a pretty like, yeah, like, yeah, somewhat in depth like dev interview almost, like from the time gap between their first closed beta test and second closed beta test, they pretty much had to like redo like a lot of fucking things. Like they had to like basically tear down like the lighting model that they had and fix like the whole color aesthetic of the game because it's too dull, according to like testers of that game. And they revamped like a lot of like the models and the game flow and structure. They pretty much remade the entire game almost from scratch, I guess, that they were talking about probably in between those closed betas. So it's been having one hell of a development cycle. Like, I would say it's a troubled development cycle. And even then, like, the feedback on the most recent closed beta is, like...
The gearing system?
I think a lot of people are pretty lukewarm. Like, they said, you know, they've made more improvements to it that they laid out in a separate post. But who knows if it'll actually come together at the end. Like, I think this is one of those games that's, like... I still think it'll be in a rough spot when it launches. And then they'll figure it out in the coming months after. I don't think it's going to be, like... I think it's going to be in a rough spot.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to catch up at this point. But, you know, I'm all for more competition, you know.
Yeah, competition benefits players, you know, to get more variety and no monopoly. So, you know, like at this point, the only thing that will kill, quote unquote, kill Genshin is Genshin itself.
That's kind of like the same thing when people say about WoW. The only thing that kills WoW is WoW itself, right?
Yeah.
Like they have a bad expansion.
I mean, and look at Halo. Like they're talking about Halo killers. Now look at Halo these days. What killed Halo?
Halo.
You know, not to say like Halo Infinite's not in a much, much better spot than it was at launch now, because they actually have like proper like modding support to that game.
Support. Yeah, I would say that silently. Well, not really silently, if you've been paying attention, but like nowadays, Halo Infinite is probably one of the best first-person shooters you can play.
It's in a much better spot now. Yeah. But it just doesn't have like the same mindshare and like common sentiment, like positive sentiment throughout people because they fell off of it after like a very poor launch, I would say. People were high on it at launch, but then like I think like 3 to 4 months like after it, it just completely like just for people turned against it. They brought it back, but it's.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you like first-person shooters, particularly Halo, I'm going to tell you something that you should maybe consider. Halo Infinite is the best playing Halo game. If you want to have some fun with your friends, you should probably try it out now. It's really good these days.
Like, there's a lot of custom Forge Mode shit going around now.
One of my favorite ones is the Costco map, where it's just like you just it's really, really fun.
Oh man, that sounds amazing, actually. Costco
map.
Yeah.
What is this?
So you know how? Well, Chow, have you ever? Do they have Costco's in Canada?
Yeah, my brother used shops there a lot. So
okay, so you've been into a Costco and how it's like a big warehouse with a bunch of things to hide around potentially. So now imagine you're playing a match of Halo, and it's at a Forge map that's just basically a Costco.
Oh,
and all that entails.
Sounds a very interesting map.
So yeah, I mean, not to say that like Halo Infinite is bad these days, but it sucks that the Halo like reputation, it's gonna take a lot of for that to come back, to get people excited in a new entry.
That's all on Microsoft, man, with the whole 18.6 contractor thing, or was it 16.8? Either way, the whole contractor thing has just kept messing up their release schedule. It came out from a few folks that worked on the most recent Forza that it was also hamstrung by the same shit. And it's it's like, you'd think that after Halo Infinite was maligned very publicly for that stuff, they wouldn't do the same thing with Forza, but it's like, and they wonder why Xbox is struggling. It's like, come on.
Ay, ay, ay. Well, hopefully get
this podcast brought to you by Xbox Game Pass.
No, not actually not. We can't. We don't get into legal trouble.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So before the podcast, I asked what was the definition of mothering, and Brian, what was your answer to what was the definition?
I googled it at the time, and I don't remember. Something to do with wind.
Something with wind. Okay.
Mothering.
Mothering.
According to Google, which is obviously arbiter of God. Can't be wrong.
Yep.
Characterized by strong winds.
There you go.
Blowing strongly with a roaring sound.
I believe for this game on PC, I don't know if they, I think they'll have their own custom client, but I believe you can also get it from Epic Games Store. So, there you go. If you're interested in trying this game out, it's not going to be on Steam. Get Epic Games.
And then this isn't new news because it was breaking off the press when we recorded last week's podcast, but we got the release date for our Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail. The official release date is June 2nd, though. July 2nd. I've convoluted with the next thing I was going to say. Oh. Anyone who pre-orders it will have access on June 28th. So July 2nd, officially available June 28th, 90% of people who are playing it. At the time, we didn't have any press release or anything, and now we've got the pre-release collector's package, other details about the figure and all the other launch timing and all the things like that. So we have all the official press packet information up on the site now.
Are there going to be for James and Chow, are there going to be any updates on the structural the server side things to get prepared for the Dawn Trail release to avoid what happened with Endwalker?
Well, they already, through Endwalker, they actually had quite a few server upgrades. They released an Oceania data center, and then they also added a new North America data center, which included a bunch of new servers.
Okay.
And I believe there was also a server upgrade in Japan, I think.
Mm.
So it's overall, they have a lot more servers now. So okay. I think I don't foresee Dawn Trail having anywhere near the same issues that Endwalker did at launch.
But that also don't think it will do Endwalker numbers, so I don't think it will be much of a
concern. It's also worth noting that Endwalker itself wasn't really as, from a population perspective, wasn't as bad as you might remember it. A lot of it was, the queues actually moved pretty quickly. The problem is that you would get disconnected from the queue because of a bug. But if you reconnected within a minute, you would still save your spot. So the main problem with it was, before they fixed it, was that you basically had to constantly be looking at the queue, because if you disconnected from the queue, then you were basically shit out of luck. But if you were kind of babying it, it only took about an hour to get in. And then they also added in the ability, the thing where it's like if you were AFK for like half an hour, you just got kicked. So like I think the one thing they might do for Dawn Trails, they might bring back the AFK timer. And I think that's all really they might have to do. And even then, I don't even know if they'll need the AFK timer just because of like, we don't know if Dawn Trail is going to be as big as Endwalker. I wouldn't anticipate it being as big as Endwalker. So
they don't have to go the like, do not play our game. It's too fucking full already. Go play other games.
Yeah.
Man, I remember those days. It's like, why are you like waking up at 7 a.m.? It's like, I didn't get into this work.
Let me put it this way. If they were really worried about not having enough capacity in the servers, I'm pretty sure Yoshi P would not have delayed the game to get it out of the way of the Elden Ring DLC.
That's a real threat these days, you know?
And actually, the last bit of news that I have on the podcast is talking about the Inazuma 11 beta going to other platforms, which we already kind of already talked about. So that's the last thing I actually have listed to talk about here. So kind of a pretty light news slate in the presence of lots of games having been released and still being released. So
finally, the mythical under 2 hour podcast.
Holy,
it happened.
It actually exists.
Yeah, but for upcoming events this week, it's not really too much. There's a Ryuga Gotoku Studio TV bra. Thing. I don't know if they say there's gonna be a major announcement in it, but I don't know.
Judgment 3.
Who knows?
Honestly, so. I could see it. It would be about time for a third Judgment game.
I would love to see that. So yeah, we're gonna have that. I don't know what this Mega 6 official live stream. I don't know what that is.
There's I know a couple of indie publishers are putting together a. It's kind of a silly name, a Triple I Initiative, which is like an indie showcase. That's in a couple of weeks, I think.
No, okay, I'm hitting, you know, that's I enjoy it. Triple I, get it. I'm on board.
April 10, I believe, on that one.
Yeah, but so yeah. it's got what's sort of funny is they call it like indie, but it has like Gearbox on it.
I wonder if Gearbox is still going to be part of it, because the whole thing. What I was going to say is that it's funny to joke about that, but Gearbox Publishing actually published quite a few indie games. Like they handled Risk of Rain 2. Yeah. So it's like, and obviously it feels weird to call Risk of Rain an indie game now, considering it's sold like over like what last I heard, definitely over 10 million. I think it might actually be closer to like 15 million now.
Yeah,
crazy.
It sold a lot.
But yeah, this Triple I Initiative is on April 10th, and some of the studios include A44, which is behind the upcoming game Flintlock, which we talked about a few times. It's got Digital Sun Games, who did Moonlighter. It's got it's got Gearbox Publishing, Risk of Rain. It's got Focus Entertainment, which is not really indie.
Okay. If it was specifically Gearbox Publishing, they're definitely not part of it anymore, because when they got bought by 2K, like almost immediately, like it came out that pretty much every single person from Gearbox Publishing was let go.
Yeah, and even Take-Two's press release, when they said they bought Gearbox, basically explicitly said they didn't take on over the publishing. So
yeah,
no one bought that.
It genuinely sucks, but at least in this case, it makes sense why that happened, because it's like Take-Two has so many people that handles that stuff.
That whole situation was kind of like a little bit grim for me and my friends, because it's like, oh, what properties got over? It's like, oh, like a lot of the Gearbox stuff, except Remnant, didn't come on over. It's like, oh.
Wait, Remnant? Oh, God. Oh, God. Fuck. No. Oh, God.
Yeah, Remnant didn't come over.
I think that's technically Gearbox Publishing.
Yeah, it's like, is that because like Embracer actually wanted to keep Remnant, or I don't.
Like, anyway, some of the other studios in this initiative include Ghost Ship Publishing, who are behind Deep Rock Galactic, Heart Machine, who's behind Hyper Light Drifter, and then the upcoming Hyper Light Breaker. It's got Red Hook Studios, which is Darkest Dungeon, Gentle Bros, which is Cat Quest, Tiny Build, which is a handful of things, Thunder Lotus, which is Spiritfarer. So yeah, just some indie stuff. We'll see if anything interesting comes from that.
By the way, Cat Quest is surprisingly fun. I played a little bit of Cat Quest too.
There's a third one coming out. What's sort of funny about the third Cat Quest is they first called it like a different title, like pirate themed. I think it was literally Pirates of the Caribbean. And then they're like, no, it's Cat Quest 3 now.
Just have that be the subtitle. Yeah. Like,
that's a good title.
And then, of course, we're going to come up into April. So, as usual, call out the release date calendar that we keep on our website. That's 99% maintained and updated by Adam. We'll post it to our socials as well. Looking ahead, we've already talked about it a lot, but just to highlight it one last time as we head off into April. Obviously, we've got, at the end of the month, Aiden Chronicle, April 23rd, Saga Emerald Beyond, April 25th. Megaton Musashi Wired, which is like the global release of Megaton Musashi, April 25th.
Sandland is also April 25th. Yeah.
So it's gonna be brutal because like it's a lot of like the early April stuff. It's kind of like it's not a lot of new releases. Really,
it's not an RPG. I feel like the biggest early April release, which I think I'm the only person that actually gives a shit about, is that new Puyo Puyo game that's exclusive to Apple Arcade.
Yeah, yeah.
And hey, it might be an RPG. It's using the Puyo Puyo Chronicles models. What if it's secretly Puyo Puyo Chronicles 2?
Oh shit!
We learned
if it is, I will write a review.
We learned that like 2 weeks ago, Broken Roads got its new release date on April 10th, and I'm interested in it. I don't think it'll be great, but it looks interesting, and maybe I'll be surprised, and it's surprisingly great. Who knows? So I'm interested in Broken Roads. I'm going to try to clear my calendar to play that when it comes out early in the month. But yeah, late April is like we're all like trying to scramble the beat.
Oh god!
So we have like a 2 week period here, two and a half maybe, where it's a little bit lighter, not empty, but a little lighter to catch up on all your games.
Here's a weird thing, right? Because all those titles in late April are going to like release side by side, but in May you have the whole of May to pretty much play through them at your own pace. Because there's not a lot in May.
Yeah, there's like Paper Mario: The Thousand Year Door, which is like 30 hours max, so it's like
that's
not
late
a big
day as well.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. It's also, you know, I mean, Paper Mario: Thousand Year Door is great, but it's like,
for me, like Thousand Year Door, I think it's an excellent game. I would love to replay it, but in the interest of time, like, okay, I know it's an excellent game. I will champion Thousand Year Door, but I'll play the remaster remake eventually.
Yeah, I told you that, I've never played it.
Well,
you should play it. That would not be surprising. I mean, that's not surprising.
You can be the voice of the newcomer, and you can be like, actually, guys, I think you overhyped this.
Where's the
y'all like, played this when you were young?
Chow playing Thousand Year Door is going to ask how does he like pull for characters?
Fuck.
Oh man.
Chow's going to be like, is this the Genshin killer?
Well, without further ado, thank you all for listening to this episode of the TetraCast. You can find us on all the podcast services as well as on the website. So leave us a comment on whether it's Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to us. Leave us a rating and a comment. We love reading those. You can find RPG Site at our website, of course, at rpgsite.net. You can also find us on all the social media channels, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. You can join our Discord by hitting the link at the top of our home screen or going to discord.gg/RPGsite. And we'll be back in April with another episode of the TetraCast in 1 week. So until you hear from us then, stay safe and take care. And we'll talk to y'all later.
Later, everyone.
You don't understand, guys. SSR Luigi's numbers are too high. I couldn't skip that.
When are they going to give us an SSR Waluigi?
That's true.
He didn't even show up for Smash.
Just give me my Luigi in Waffle Kingdom game.
Hmm.